This is Ibarian X, the host of the Candid Frame Photography Podcast, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 44. Canon and Sony release exciting new gear. In this episode, Canon releases its flagship 1DX Mark II, Sony drops a bomb with fast f2.8 zooms and their A6300. If you have a 3TB Seagate drive, you may want to switch. A photographer is harassed on a beach in Toronto. Photojournalists in Canada are becoming extinct. And should birds be used to attack drones? All that and more in episode 44 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Ibarian X. I greatly appreciate it. It goes without saying, but Ibarian X Perillo has one of, if not the best voices in podcasting. Not just photography podcasting, but all of podcasting. He's been one of my biggest influences as a podcaster, and I've been listening to the Candid Frame for many, many years now. If you want to dive deep into what makes amazing photographers tick, you'll want to check out what he's doing over at thecandidframe.com. Ibarian X is also a quite accomplished photographer, and a really great guy, so check him out. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 44 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. We also greatly appreciate you telling your friends as well. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. In less than 1 month's time, we've seen the release of both Nikon's and now Canon's flagship bodies, and wow, they are stunning. Granted, most people are never going to own one as they're crazy expensive, but as with other technology, this stuff is eventually going to make its way down to the more affordable models for the rest of us, so it's nice to have a look at them. Now, before anyone gets bummed out about not having the $6,000 or so US for these amazing cameras, keep in mind that A, they're not going to make your photos any better. They're just not. And B, they're built like tanks and made for photographers that operate in pretty rough conditions and or need something top shelf because that's demanded of them for their job. You're not buying one of these to shoot senior photos, and most wedding photographers aren't buying these as well. It's just overkill. I've owned this class of body before, and as a photojournalist and sports photographer, I can tell you it really does come in handy though. Now sure, you can make do with a less expensive body, but hey, it's fun to have something that's designed for exactly what you need it for. It's been about 4 years now since Canon introduced their EOS 1DX, and with the Mark II version now, they've seriously upped their game. In fact, I think that this body edges out Nikon's recently released D5. Not by a lot, but I think it still does. But don't get me wrong, they are both insanely amazing bodies. But this offering by Canon is really going to be appreciated by those who need what it delivers on. So what do you think? Let's take a peek under the hood and see what this thing's all about, huh? It has a brand new 20.2 megapixel full-frame CMOS sensor with a native ISO range of 100 on up to 51,200 and can be expanded up to the digital snowstorm that is 409,600. No one is shooting that high, of course. The 1DX Mark II has a larger 61-point high-density reticular AF2 system that boasts 41 of the more accurate cross-type AF points, and the sensitivity of the center point has been improved to operate down to -3 EV with compatibility down to F8. Now, that's something that wildlife shooters with ginormous lenses and teleconverters are going to love. Now they're going to have autofocus back. That's going to be greatly appreciated by them. This body has dual DIGIC 6 Plus image processors, helping it to deliver a staggering 16 frames per second in live view mode, or 14 frames per second for standard continuous shooting. The latter being what most people are going to be shooting in, and that's the same rate that the original 1DX had. So no improvement on that front. Now, Canon has decided to put in one CFast 2.0 slot in this body, along with a standard compact flash card slot. So if you use the former, it'll allow you to shoot 170 raw photos before the buffer fills up. So basically, you're unlikely to ever hit that limit, and that's pretty nice. The shutter is rated at 400,000 actuations, another thing that most are unlikely to hit, and the mirror mechanism has been redesigned so it'll create less vibrations while tearing away at such high speeds. That, I think, is a really good feature. Now, Canon has wisely included 4K in this body, and it can shoot that at up to 60 frames per second. And according to the company, there are, quote, virtually no restrictions, end quote. You may remember that with the Nikon D5, it has to shoot video in 3-minute segments. It can't do a full 30 minutes like the 1DX Mark II can. So that's a bit of a problem if you're shooting video. Now, a really sweet innovation in this body is Canon's built-in image optimization. Their digital lens optimizer, as it's called, stores info about the optical flaws of lenses, then digitally fixes those flaws on the fly with virtually zero decrease in speed. For the first time in a Canon EOS DSLR, the camera can now take care of problems such as chromatic aberration, barrel and pincushion distortion, diffraction, and more. All things that in the past you had to do in post-production. And that took you some time, of course. Now let's let that sink in here for a second. This camera is fixing problems for you. It's saving you time, and time is money, of course. So over time, this camera is going to offset its costs by saving you a lot of time. Time you can use to market yourself or go shoot other things to make yourself money. And that is a massive feature of this new camera in my mind. Okay, here we go. Some are going to fall out of their chairs with this next one. It has a touch screen. Ooh, right? Now, surely the haters aren't going to complain that a $6,000 camera has a touchscreen, right? I'm waiting. I know that some are. You know, those people weren't going to buy this camera anyhow. And that's despite saving all that money by living in mom's basement. Well, yeah, we know who those people are. The trolls in the forums and the theoretical photographers, as I call them. They'll never own a camera like this, but boy, they're going to complain about it. As you may imagine, there are tons more awesome things about this camera, and if you want to read about them, you can head on over to episode 44 show notes at petapixel.com/podcast. But I wanted to reach out to a guy that this camera is actually designed for, someone who can't afford to miss the shot, someone who's operating at the top of the food chain and needs a no-nonsense body like the Canon 1DX Mark II. So I reached out to longtime Sports Illustrated photographer Damian Strohmeyer for his thoughts on this body, since he's actually shot with it. In fact, he used it this past weekend at the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. As I record this, Damian's in San Francisco gearing up to shoot the Super Bowl this coming Sunday, but he was kind enough to take the time to let us know what he thinks about the Canon EOS 1DX Mark II. So let's hear what he has to say.
Thanks, Mike. I had the opportunity to test the new Canon EOS 1DX Mark II at the Pro Bowl Sunday and have came away impressed, to say the least. The improvements are numerous. The highlights of that would be the improved high ISO. We're seeing in tests that I did prior to the Pro Bowl, I shot as high as ISO 8000, which looked like, you know, we used to look at ISO 800. The file quality is much better, sharper, more tonal range. AF is even better than what it was before. Put the red dot back in there, red autofocus brackets, we can see that a little better. And the buffer is no longer an issue. I could not buffer the camera out shooting RAW plus large JPEG. So overall, you know, we've got a camera there that's going to be able to do a lot of things better than what it's doing now. And I don't see anything but positives coming out of this camera from a user standpoint. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Damian, for taking the time to give us that feedback. I really appreciate it. And to check out Damian's work, hit the show notes for the link or check him out at DamianStrohmeyer.com. Damian is one of the top sports photographers of all time. You've all seen his work before. He's just amazing. You know, as much as I've been mostly a Nikon and Sony mirrorless guy, I've got to give the advantage to Canon on this one. It's not a massive edge, like I said, but Canon has some key features and technologies that the D5 just doesn't have. That said, anyone buying a Nikon D5 is going to be insanely happy with it. If you have $6,500 burning a hole in your pocket, of course. Hey, the Canon 1DX Mark II is only $6,000. Saves you $500. So in that regard, the advantage goes to Canon as well. $500 is $500. Sony just dropped the mic and has upped its game once again by announcing the A6300 and its new G Master line of pro lenses, including two f2.8 zooms, that's right, an 85mm f1.4, and two teleconverters. Yeah, it is getting real now. One of the criticisms of Sony's gear was its lack of f2.8 zooms for its E-mount mirrorless system, Well, that argument is starting to fade away with the introduction of Sony's new 24-70 and 70-200mm f2.8 G Master zooms. Something that many said was not coming has actually now appeared. Now, I'm not sure why they poo-pooed it. Maybe they wanted to deny that mirrorless was not indeed maturing and is not the real deal. But these lenses seem to prove otherwise. No longer can the haters point to the lack of serious f2.8 glass being available. But now they're just going to default to, well, Canon and Nikon have way more lenses in their lineups. Until that changes, of course. And that's true. Sony doesn't have anywhere near the number of lenses that Canon and Nikon have, of course. But as I always say to people, how many lenses does one buy anyhow? Most people have 2 to 3 lenses. You're not going to buy all 50 or 60 that Canon and Nikon have available. So it's really a silly argument, I think. In addition to these fast zooms, Sony has also released a really sweet 85mm f1.4 prime that looks really promising. And they've also released 1.4x and 2x teleconverters. Now, I'm not a huge fan of teleconverters, but if these are optically amazing, I might be convinced otherwise. Probably not. We'll see. I'm just not a big fan of losing one or two stops of light, and generally they tend to make your images not as sharp. But who knows, maybe Sony's done some magic on these. According to Sony VP Neil Manowitz, quote, "The new G Master brand represents the finest and most impressive group of lenses that Sony has ever brought to market. With our knowledge of what the future will bring for digital imaging, we have designed these lenses and can ensure that the G Master brand will inspire and wow photographers and videographers for years to come." End quote. Now, those are some big words, but you know what? Sony's delivered in the last few years, and I have a feeling that he's probably right about this. It's getting harder and harder for people to deny that Sony's E-mount system is the real deal. Sony has said that they've designed these lenses to be able to resolve an incredible amount of resolution. Now look at Canon, for instance. They've got the 5DS and the 5DSR, and most of the lenses that they have in their lineup can't resolve anywhere near the 50 or so megapixels that those things produce. So Sony is obviously thinking about those things and making sure that their lenses straight out of the gate can resolve an incredible amount of resolution. That is amazing. These things look incredibly well built, have all the things that you'd expect them to have, like weather sealing, etc. But the thing that I find really cool is on that 85mm f1.4. And that is the inclusion of an aperture ring with on-off switchable click stops. You know, this is clearly designed for those who shoot video and need their adjustments to be really smooth. So I have a feeling they're going to have a hard time keeping this particular lens in stock. The 24-70mm f2.8 and 85mm f1.4 will be available sometime next month in March 2016 for $2,200 US and $1,800 respectively. Sports and portrait photographers are going to have to wait a little bit longer for the 70-200mm f2.8 and those new teleconverters. They're going to be available sometime in May 2016 and pricing is yet to be announced for them. Now, if you were skittish about switching to Sony due to the lack of pro lenses, you now have what looks to be 3 great reasons to maybe have another look at them. But also announced today, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016, was the replacement to Sony's great A6000. And they've decided that rather than naming it the A6100, they've gone ahead and named it the A6300. Who knows why? You know, perhaps it's to illustrate that they view it as more than just a minor update, and they want people to know that by the naming. I don't know. As many of you know, I own and love the A6000. I got it for $450 new, and it is an incredible body, especially for sports. It's not a pro-level top body, but it does amazing things. So this new body, this A6300, is particularly interesting to me. As they did with the A6000, Sony claims that the A6300 has the world's fastest autofocus, and they're saying that it has the world's highest number of autofocus points. The latter is a provable fact, of course. It either does or it doesn't, but we'll see just how fast the autofocus is. I have no doubt that it's going to be incredibly speedy. The AF on my A6000 is incredible. Now, shooting indoor basketball and other poorly lit things, though, it struggled with those, if I'm being honest. Well over a year or so ago, I did a shootout with the A6000, my Nikon D4S, my D750, and my old Nikon D700. The A6000 couldn't quite keep up with indoor basketball, and if you want to see that, I've got that over on LensShark.com. But as for the A6300, Sony has a new 4D focus system that can lock onto a subject in as little as 0.05 seconds. That's almost instantaneous, setting a new record amongst APS-C sensor interchangeable lens cameras, according to Sony at least. It has an amazing, now get this, 425 phase detection AF points that are densely placed across the entire frame. In fact, it's 7.5 times more dense than in the A6000. That is crazy talk right there. Now, thanks to the density of the AF points, you're going to be able to achieve fast and accurate continuous autofocusing while shooting at 11 frames per second. And what's really cool is that if you wanted to use Sony's A-mount lenses, the enhanced tracking and AF are also compatible with them via an adapter, a first for a Sony APS-C camera. Under the hood, the A6300 has a 24.2 megapixel XMOR CMOS sensor with an ISO range of 100 to an impressive 51,200. Of this new camera, Sony says, quote, "The new image sensor employs copper wiring in its structure, which improves light collection efficiency and significantly accelerates readout speed," end quote. Now, round back is an XGA OLED TrueFinder electronic viewfinder with 2.4 million dots and a 120 frames per second frame rate mode for smooth subject tracking. The A6300 has a magnesium alloy body that's resistant to dust and moisture and has 9 customizable buttons that can be used to operate 64 different functions. You know, as with the A6000, this isn't the body that you take out in a rainstorm. You definitely want to have some kind of protection on it. This is not one of the flagship Nikon and Canon models that can take a beating as far as rain and snow goes. You definitely want to protect it. So make sure you do that if you get this body. Now, amazingly, the A6300 can capture 4K video in the camera with full pixel readout and no pixel binning in Super 35mm mode. Another first for a non-full frame Sony camera. If you shoot video, you know that is quite an accomplishment right there. It can also do full HD, also known as 1080p, at 120 frames per second, S-Log gamma recording with approximately a 14-stop latitude, that is awesome, S-gamut for a wider color space, and much more. Sony has very smartly added a microphone line input, which is going to be very much appreciated, because the A6000 didn't have that, silent shooting, and of course, Wi-Fi and NFC communication. The Sony A6300 is going to be available sometime in March 2016 with a price tag of about $1,000 US for the camera only, or $1,150 when paired with the 16-50mm f3.5-5.6 kit lens. And you know what? For $150, that kit lens actually isn't too bad. This is pretty exciting stuff, especially those f2.8 zooms. That is awesome. We've been wanting that for a while now, and so many people are going to be all over those. With my A6000, I'm able to get shots that are pretty darn close to what I could get with a DSLR. But if this A6300 lives up to its specs, combine those with the new 7200mm f2.8, for instance, when shooting sports, and it is quite compelling. And of course, I can't wait to get my hands on them and see for sure. I think you know that they're in my future, right? That's right. Okay, in the ridiculous news segment, well, we don't actually have a segment called that per se, but if we did, this story would be in it. In the UK, 3-year-old Jacob Bellis recently won a photo contest after taking a selfie with his father David and what looked like a grinning horse in the background. The prize was £2,000. That's about $2,880 US as I record this. That's great, huh? What could possibly go wrong with this? That's right. The owner of the horse is demanding a share of the prize money. The Guardian reports that after Thompson Holidays announced the boy as the winner of their recent Made Me Smile competition, the travel company was contacted by the horse's owner, Nicola Mitchell. Her argument is that the boy and his father didn't ask for permission before including their horse, and that her family had trained the horse to do that. Mitchell told the Guardian, quote, "I was really annoyed to hear that Bellis had won a £2,000 holiday and had used a picture of our horse without permission. He should have asked for our consent. There should be some token gesture, as it is our horse that has really won him that holiday. I didn't even know that this competition was on. If I had known about it, we would have entered and could have won, as Betty is always sticking her tongue out," end quote. Now, this is just ridiculous. I don't know the law there in the UK, and honestly, I don't even know what the law is here in the United States. But, come on, this is nuts. For people, you need a model release, of course, or some sort of permission from them, but animals are classified as property here in the United States. I know that for images that are sold commercially, that you could get sued by a property owner for including their home or property in images, and I'm not sure if that extends to animals as well. But this happened to a friend of mine many years ago when he shot outside a popular Phoenix hotel and didn't ask their permission and sold those images as stock. That cost him over $10,000, and he will definitely never do that again. But I'm not sure about the law as it relates to simply submitting a photo to a contest. And I love how the horse's owner seems to think that if they had submitted a photo of their horse doing this with their family in it or whatever, that somehow they would have won the contest. A contest that they didn't even know existed. It's kind of like complaining about not winning a lottery when you didn't even buy a ticket. Now, to their credit, Thompson Holidays isn't having it, saying, quote, "Our Blue Monday competition was meant to make people smile on what's been deemed the most depressing day of the year, and we're sorry to hear if it's caused any upset with the horse's reported owners. We are yet to receive a formal complaint, but we'll be sure to look into it as and when we do." Either way, this works out great for them. They're standing behind young Jacob and his father, who plan on using this money for their first ever family vacation. And that's nice, of course. Of course, of course. I hope everyone gets that reference. Maybe not. Next. Here's a quick update on the photographer in Singapore who we told you about in episode 43. Now, you all remember him, I'm sure. He shot a photo looking up a cage ladder alongside a building. And oh yeah, he photoshopped in some clip art of an airplane, won Nikon Singapore's photo contest, and outraged photographers everywhere. Honestly, it was more annoying that Nikon Singapore didn't notice the white rectangle around the plane. So there's that. You'd think that they had their monitors calibrated, or more than one person was looking at the photo and would have seen it. But no. We at Petapixel received an email directly from the photographer last Friday, January 29, 2016, in which he apologized. Then, over the weekend on Instagram, he apologized some more, a post that's received nearly 1,100 comments thus far, most of which are critical of him and his handling of this issue. People were not too kind as they tend to be online. They're going to say stuff that they wouldn't say to you in person. Nikon Singapore has since apologized and removed the original post, promising to scrutinize future submissions to its photography contests. As if this story wasn't weird enough as it is, it has since come out that the photographer's contest submission was nearly identical to a photo published by a well-known Singaporean photographer named Yik Keat a year earlier. A similar shot looking up those same stairs, but this time with a real plane skillfully inserted into the scene. That photographer, though, made it clear when posting it back then that it was a composite. The moral of the story here, learn Photoshop. And oh yeah, don't try to dupe anyone. Next! As photographers, it's crucial that we properly back up our images, or when a hard drive tanks, and it eventually will, we're hosed. They're gone forever. And if you use Seagate hard drives, you need to be aware of a class action suit regarding them. According to TechSpot, a lawsuit has been filed in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California regarding the company's 3-terabyte hard drives. Specifically, their Barracuda 3-terabyte and the Backup Plus 3-terabyte external. The complaint alleges that these particular drives, quote, failed at exceptionally high rates, leaving consumers with broken hardware and significant loss of data, end quote. Yeah, that's not good. I mean, hard drives are designed to contain your data, and hopefully reliably. So when they fail, that's not a good thing. Now, some of the reported failures occurred just days after consumers began storing data on them. And to further back up these claims of failure, the ginormous cloud storage company Backblaze reports that it's tested over 49,000 hard drives over the years, and their results confirm that Seagate's 3-terabyte drives are among the least reliable. The lawsuit also alleges that Seagate sent out faulty and unreliable drives as replacements to customers who experienced failures with their original drives. How's that, huh? Something that goes against both consumer laws and the company's own warranties. So if you own a 3-terabyte Seagate Barracuda drive, you might want to make sure you have those files backed up to another drive, or maybe move away from that Seagate drive altogether. If you've experienced a failure with one of these drives, you're encouraged to contact the law firm behind the suit to join this class. And of course, we have the link for them in our show notes for episode 44 at petapixel.com/podcast. And it goes without saying that if your files exist in just one location and that drive fails, they no longer exist. So assess your backup strategy before the unthinkable happens, because eventually it will happen. All hard drives fail. So make sure you've got everything backed up. The job of photojournalist isn't what it once was. I'm a former photojournalist myself and left a perfectly good career. But many others have been cut due to the realities of the newspaper business. And it's not getting any better. And that's not just here in the United States. Canada has started off 2016 with a number of layoffs and murmurings that have others worried about losing their jobs as well. Jimmy Jong, who's the chair of freelance photography for the News Photographers Association of Canada, reported recently that in just one day, January 19th, 2016, 13 photographers had been let go. There's also been a major labor dispute at the Chronicle Herald, the largest independently owned newspaper in Canada, which has been saying that it plans on laying off its staff photographers. So it's not looking very good for photojournalists in Canada, or anywhere actually, so stay tuned. On July 2nd, 2015, a photographer named Ryan Vasima was photographing a model on a beach in Toronto, Canada, but despite there being nearly nobody there and not causing a problem for anyone, they were still asked to leave. At about 6 a.m. as the sun was rising over Lake Ontario, the duo was approached by a very ticked off City of Toronto worker in a little tractor of some sort. He was there removing debris left on the beach from the night before because it was Canada Day. You know, it was mostly fireworks and the usual stuff that you see the day after a celebration. The city worker confronted the photographer, asking him for his permit, and what ensued was a ridiculous demonstration of what happens when someone perceives himself as having more power than they actually do and clearly not understanding the rules. I'm talking about the city worker here. He told the photographer that he needed a permit to shoot on the beach because of the type of camera he was using, a DSLR. Never mind that thousands of people bring their DSLRs to the beach, which is not always a great idea, by the way, you know, the sand and the spray and everything. But still, that fact was lost on the worker, and he wasn't budging at all. He threatened to call the bylaw enforcement officer and have him write a $350 ticket if they didn't leave immediately. And no matter how hard the photographer tried to explain that he wasn't doing commercial photography, this guy just wasn't hearing it. You know, he was just there at the beach, getting some shots, I don't know, for his portfolio, working on his craft. That's his business. He wasn't doing anything wrong. However, the worker insisted that only a professional photographer doing a commercial photo shoot with a model would be on the beach so early in the morning. Never mind that the sun rises that time, of course. You know, it's not like you can show up at noon and get those kind of shots of that golden hour light. The photographer and the model left, however, and he later called the City of Toronto's customer service line, where the man on the other end took things to a whole new level of weird by asking him what he was wearing that day. Yeah, that's not odd at all now, is it? Except for, wait, it is. Apparently, if you're dressed casually, you're good to go. But if you're all dressed up, you need a permit. And that makes no sense at all. I guess if you're there in your shorts and a tank top, you're not a professional. But if you have nice slacks and a nice shirt on, professional, right? Because that equals professional, just like a big fancy camera does. Except for no, it doesn't. This thing is so stupid. You know, what is with all these nonsensical rules and regulations? It never used to be this way. Like I've said before, the war on photography is real. Ever since 9/11, people have security concerns because somehow the obvious photographer with a long lens is up to no good. And if you're there doing a photo shoot with a pretty model, well, we must get some money out of you because you're making money. Never mind, you're just working on your portfolio and trying to work on your photography and get better. They never consider that, of course. You used to be able to shoot wherever you wanted, whenever you wanted, and you didn't have to deal with any of this nonsense. As photographers, it's important to know your rights. No matter where you live, find out what the crazy rules are wherever you're going to be shooting and be prepared because at some point or another, a city worker, a member of law enforcement, even a member of the public is going to approach you and ask you if you have the right permits or if you have permission to be there, and you need to know what to say to them. And it needs to be accurate. So know what you're going to say, stand up for your rights, but also don't get yourself arrested because in my opinion, it's just not worth it. You can always go back another day or find a different location. I swear to you that like all the other stories here on the podcast, this is an actual real story. I'm not pulling your leg when I say that in the Netherlands, eagles are being trained to pluck drones out of the sky. Yep, just yep. So far we've seen anti-drone rifles, ammunition to shoot them out of the sky, Spider-Man-style giant webs that can be shot at them, and now eagles. That's just amazing. I swear, you just can't make this stuff up, people. It is just too bizarre. No one would believe you. Well, the Dutch National Police are super proud of being the first police force in the world to have made this happen. Apparently, they've partnered up with a Raptor training company in The Hague. And despite the fact that drone propellers have been known to cause major injury to people, they're allowing these birds to participate in this nonsense. I'm surprised that PETA isn't all over this. Instead, it's still trying to make that monkey in Indonesia, Naruto, gain copyright to the selfie images that it shot a couple years ago. Yes, it is hard to believe, but this is the world that we live in. It's just unbelievable. What's next? I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 44 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 45. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.